Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I am your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. Let's get right into SmackDown, because I don't want to talk about this for long. So we start out with Jeff Hardy basically giving a play-by-play of what he remembers from, you know, his ordeal last week to, like, members of the ring crew and the backstage people. That's what he's doing backstage. He's silently, we can't hear him, but he's like, hey, and I was like, oh, really? Wow, Jeff, tell us more. And then they go back and they show us the footage of what happened last week, all edited together nicely, and or what we saw, the aftermath. And then he comes down the ring and wants to say, I just want to say thank you for letting me have this time. And this is where we start to see all the people hanging out at ringside. And there are a bunch of people there that we don't know or don't know very well. We've seen him on TV a couple of times. But then there's like Shotzi Blackheart, who's got a takeover match this weekend. She's part of the six-woman tag match. We got Malcolm Bivens, who manages the Induce Share, the absolutely 100% can't miss, definitely going to happen, future bodyguards of Jinder Mahal. And then you got Casey Catanzaro, Caden Carter, who've had matches on Raw and several matches on NXT. You've got Marina Shafir, Jessamyn Duke, former cohorts of Shayna Baszler, who we saw on NXT TV a lot. These are the people I just mentioned. They are established characters, figures in NXT. They have personalities. They have alignments. They have attachments. They are fully fledged human beings. They are not avatars on which to project Vince's idea of what a crowd should be. Now, in my opinion, none of these PC drones that we've never seen before, they also aren't just an empty canvas on which Vince McMahon can paint his idealized WWE universe. But in particular, we know for a fact Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke, unless they've had like an off-screen babyface turn, them girls is heels. Malcolm Bivens, total heel when he's been managing Induce Share. These people, they're not, they shouldn't be mindlessly cheering for the baby faces and booing all the heels. It's an audience made up of 8-year-olds. All of them. That's the good guy. Yay! That's a bad guy. Boo! Like, I'm not saying they should go into business for themselves, but that's why the AEW having people in the crowd works. It works because MJF is out there with Sean Spears taking bets on the stuff. I've said this before, and I'll say it again until WWE figures it out. The reason is that they are portraying their characters even when not in the ring. It makes sense. Britt Baker attacking somebody with her shoe is great. Britt Baker standing out there because she's not in a match and going, yay, Hikaru Shida! Yay! Because you're the baby face and I'm in the fans and fans cheer for the baby face. That would be fucking stupid. And it's good that AEW isn't doing that. But it is weird to see Malcolm Bivens out there going, all right, Jeff Hardy. Yeah, Jeff Hardy. Yay. Boo. Boo, Sheamus. Boo to you, Baron Corbin. Yay, Otis. Yay, Otis. Because I don't think that Malcolm Bivens would be cheering Otis and booing Baron Corbin. Not in WWE, however. I mean, shades of gray are allowed elsewhere, but not in WWE. What was I? Right. Jeff Hardy comes out, and one of the other things, they were like, oh, everybody's practicing social distancing. And they show close up Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro, who I just realized have the same kayfabe name initials. I think Casey Catanzaro is a real name, but Caden Carter is not. I think she's Lacey Lane. She's Caden Carter now. What was I saying? Right. So they're like, they're watching Jeff Hardy like talk, being really emotional about how he feels like he knows that he didn't relapse, he didn't embarrass himself in front of his family again, and they're like, they're commiserating. They're putting each other's heads on their shoulder. Like, oh gosh, I really feel for Jeff Hardy in this moment. But now they might have actually just been using each other's bodies for support because they had been standing for 7 hours because they're not allowed chairs. Might have been resting up so they could have been more lively for the next one. I don't know. Anyway, there weren't presses and social distancing. Maybe they're roommates. I don't know. It's weird. But Jeff Hardy says he recites everything that happened that he remembers. He pulled up to the PC. He was getting his gear out of his car, and then bam! And nobody ever says that. You know, like I was out of nowhere. Like something hit me in the back of the head. You wouldn't act it out and then yell bam. I don't know. I feel like that's something that they asked him to do, and he just said, okay, whatever. I'm doing this stupid angle where you use my history of addiction as an angle. I'll do whatever you say. Fine. So he got knocked out. The next thing he knows, the cops were waking him up, and then he goes down, and so he doesn't know what is going on, but he goes down to the and that was where he talking about how can I look my wife and my little daughters in the eye if I did this, if I spent so long. I spent the last 8 months. And like, yeah, Jeff, it was 8 months ago that you got pulled over for DUI, and maybe we shouldn't be in a storyline about that right now. Yikes. Anyway, he says he was interviewed by the cops, and the cops also interviewed multiple eyewitnesses. The only one we know of is Braun Strowman, who was interviewed by Caleb Braxton last week in the parking lot. And like, I don't even know what happened. I was caught here to work, and some guy flew out of nowhere in the car. And then I heard a crash, and I looked around, and the guy got out of the car and ran away into the bushes. So I presume the cop showed up and immediately asked the one eyewitness, hey, what happened? And he was like, he said that, all of that. And they were like, cool, we won't look in the bushes. We're going to look at the car first. Cops, right? Defund them. Anyway, Jeff Hardy says apparently he, as a prime suspect in this vehicular manslaughter, possibly, if Elias doesn't pull through with all of his injuries, he is also privy as the main suspect to all these other eyewitness interviews with people that we don't know. We only thought it was Braun, but they all said that the guy who got out of the car and ran away had red hair and a red beard. Now, who do we know who looks like that? And so he says, Sheamus, get out here. You ruined everything and tried to take everything from me. Sheamus gets out there. He's like, before you cast aspersions on me, fella, maybe you want to look in your own house. Everyone knows you're a junkie. And so they fight. And Sheamus gets the best of him and then flexes. flexes, says fella. So there is no way they're not swerving us. It's too early. It's too early in that process. It's not Sheamus. We are meant to think it's Sheamus. It's not Sheamus. Do you know who it's going to be? Who I think they're planning on it being? Who else on the SmackDown roster who we haven't seen for a while, who they might want to punish with a terrible, stupid fucking angle for him to play? Who else is there who's not on TV now, but will be on TV soon, presumably? Who also has red hair and a red beard? They are 100% going to swerve us that it wasn't Sheamus who did this to Jeff Hardy. It was Sami Zayn. They're going to turn Sami Zayn, a wonderful man, a wonderful person who cares about the right things in the world and isn't silent about it, whose views on humanity are sometimes in direct opposition to the views on humanity possessed by his boss and his boss's friend who lives in a house that is white. Sami Zayn, who said, "Yeah, no, I'm not coming to work during a plague. Like, we're going to punish you, even though we said we wouldn't, by taking your title from you, and then we're going to punish you some more by making you the villain who tries to ruin Jeff Hardy's life by making you look as bad as possible. We're not going to release you. We'd never do that. We know how talented you are, but we hate you, and we're never going to let you show that talent ever again." That's what they're doing. They're going to make Sami Zayn into the guy who's framing Jeff Hardy for vehicular murder. Because it can't be Sheamus. Nah, it can't be Sheamus. It's too early for that. They're going to drag this shit out until SummerSlam. Yeah. This will be fun. So, apparently Otis and Baron Corbin have a match scheduled. Otis is wearing his, you know, he's got a new shirt. It says a steak body, I think. Body by steak. I think that's what it means. Body by steak. That's it. I think that's what it is. It's an old joke on the Body by Jake infomercials and line of videotapes. Videotapes, not DVDs. Videotapes you would put into a VHS VCR. Video cassette recorder back in the 80s and early 90s. Body by Jake. Look it up. Body by Jake. It's from a long fucking time ago. And so they had, hey, let's do a clever reference to a thing that is timely. Body by Steak. Yeah, good. Anyway, so he's got a Body by Steak shirt. Anybody seen Tucker? Has Otis eaten Tucker? You know, the vastly more talented of the two people in Heavy Machinery? Whatever happened to Tucker? They haven't mentioned him. He's been out since before WrestleMania. It is June 6th that I'm recording this. He's been out since, I believe, March. Where's Tucker? Here, Otis walking in there. He's got his denim vest over his Body by Steak belly shirt. He's like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Just bouncing along, walking next to Mandy Rose, who's wearing all denim as well. And they get to a little chair on which is draped King Corbin's cape and King Corbin's crown. Now maybe he's off taking a kingly shit on the throne, and he left his stuff there because he didn't want to bring it with him into the bathroom, which makes perfect sense to me. Now, Otis sees it and like, oh, this looks pretty good. Hey, hey, hey. This looks, oh, this neck's nice. Hey, 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 hey. And Monty's like, you should take it. Take it, put it on. Try it on. And so Otis is like, yeah, King Otis. Hey, 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 hey. And they walk down to the ring. He steals the man's hat. Now, Corbin is obviously upset by this. And, you know, who's surprised? He's an asshole. But you know who's also an asshole? Otis. For fucking with a man's stuff. Now, it's stupid. It's stupid that Baron Corbin thinks he's a king now because he won King of the Ring back in fucking September. So 9 months of him being a king, wearing a crown and in a fur cape, carrying a scepter to the ring, that makes him insane, but it's still his shit. You're messing with another man's property. You stole it. Walked down into the ring with it. Not very nice. Something that a heel would do. Something that a jackass heel would do. Otis is not turning Mandy face. Mandy is turning Otis heel. It's happening. Otis and Mandy are Dolph and Lana circa 2015, when Dolph was wearing jean everything to the ring. And Lana was like, hey, I'll wear a jean skirt and a jean jacket too. We'll be like a couple of Canadian tuxedos walking to the ring. That was when Lana had turned on Rusev for the first time. They ran that exact same fucking storyline back this time with Bobby Lashley. Then Rusev was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to go somewhere else. Thanks. And Lana's like, "What? Wait, I just signed a 5-year contract. So we'll never see each other." And Rusev's like, yes, you're right. You're right. We won't. Bye. Because Lana is terrible at everything she does. And I'm assuming it also extends to things in the home. Sorry. Sorry. Lana's terrible at everything she does. I guess Rusev would probably know that too. I love Rusev. I miss him. Anyway, what? So Otis is a heel now, and he's basically Dolph Ziggler. He's a dick. He's a douche. So they go to the ring, and Otis defeated King Corbin via disqualification when Corbin attacked him with a chair. He no-sold being hit with his stomach with a chair a couple of times, and then hit Corbin with his belly a couple of times, and the caterpillar where he bounces on his belly a couple of times, and it's sort of. Corbin got to show off being strong when he was, you know, throwing Otis around the ring, but I'm done with Otis. I'm officially anti-Otis now until they can figure out a way to actually make him seem like a human being. I told you when they made the choice, making him Money in the Bank dude, bad fucking idea. They don't know what the hell they're doing with this guy. They don't know how to handle this guy. And they're going to make it, it's going to be really bad. Do, 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 do. Hey, so Miz and Morrison say they're going to make Braun's life a living hell. They're going to ruin his life. So how they're going to do it? With pranks. Pranks that you would see like on a kid's version of Jackass. Pranks. So I guess they replaced some of the stuff in, like, they, I guess the Braun puts his protein powder in his little water bottle thing, his aluminum water bottle, like one of these that I drink out of. But mine's water, not a protein shake. I guess they replace, he puts the protein powder in first, and I guess they replaced his protein powder with baking soda. And then he goes to catering, and they have a camera set up there. And so they can watch from inside their little FBI unmarked van in the parking lot. They can watch him pour water in there. And I guess maybe they replaced all the water in the water bottles, the plastic water bottles at catering. They replaced that all with vinegar. So when he poured it into his, and he didn't smell it, it's a really stupid prank. He poured it into his thing, and it all got fizzy and jumped. It got him all wet. Got him all wet with fizzy, foul-smelling stuff. Ah, gee. Got him all wet. And oh, Braun Strowman's so mad. Now, I did appreciate that they explained why they were doing this. It's still fucking stupid, but at least they explained that why they're doing it, because they feel that if they can get into the monster's head, that an angry monster makes mistakes. So if they get him really, really angry, they don't make mistakes. It doesn't make a lot of sense why they're making him angry now, considering it's like, I don't know, 10 days until the pay-per-view. Wouldn't you make him angry next Friday? You know? Whatever. So I did appreciate that that Morrison, who's really, really good at doing everything that he's doing right now. He's very good at it. And the interplay between Miz and Morrison is fun. It's just a stupid idea. So they go, Morrison says, as a wise man once said, this is how we do it. It's Friday night. He was Montel Jordan. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. And so that's it. That was cute. later in the program, Braun Strowman was interviewed backstage by Caleb Braxton, and they have a remote set up in the unmarked van. Miz and Morrison do, and they set the whole thing up, and so they push the button on the remote, and Caleb Braxton gets slimed, like they're on a Nickelodeon game show or something. Back in my day on Nickelodeon, there was a show called "You Can't Do That on Television." It was a bunch of kids, and they were doing a sketch show for kids. And sometimes they would actually have not a sketch, but like a little, like the kids out of character, just being kids, would like have a little thing where like they'd tell each other like knock knock jokes and shit. And anytime one of the kids said, "I don't know," they would get slimed. Right? So I guess you can do this on television, but you shouldn't. You shouldn't do that on television. It's 2020, and nobody under the age of 20 has any fucking idea what the hell "you can't do that on television" is. Anybody over the age of 12 isn't like, "Oh, funny, they tried to slime the big guy, but they slimed the little girl. Da 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 da, funny comedy." Nobody thinks that. My favorite part of the whole thing, though, was Braun trying to be, you know, an actor, and they slime Kayla. And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, Kayla." Like, just, "Oh, I'm sorry, Kayla. Kayla, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Kayla. I know it was those guys, those knuckleheads. I'm going to make them pay." And it takes Braun, who got, like, in a little tiny bit, kind of, like, he got some splashback from Kayla's head onto his, like, pants and shoes, part of his arm. So it takes him, I don't know, a good hour for him to figure out how to get... He didn't wipe any of that off of himself, didn't change his clothes. Finally gets out to the parking lot. Now, in the meantime, since he's been slimed, before he gets out to the parking lot, somewhere in the middle there, Miz and Morrison take a golf club and a baseball bat, respectively, and just beat the hell out of the windshield of Braun's, I believe they called it a Buick Grand National. Yes. Okay, let's find out what that is. A Buick Grand National. Classic Buick Grand National for sale. Let's see here. Yeah, it's a 1985. Yeah, we're looking at, it's a classic, I suppose. It's 1987. I see a lot of us. It looks like an 87 was the kind of Grand National he had, which you can buy for $50,000. So it's not like $48,000, $40,000. It's not cheap. These are classics. I mean, they certainly is a different, it's a certain kind of style of classic, but they say it's his most prized possession or something. I didn't realize that he had that prized possession. But they beat it up. We beat up the windshield, and they're really happy about how they're being assholes about everything. He comes out and he's like, "With my car!" Again, this is an hour since he's been slimed. I don't know what the hell he's been doing inside. In the meantime, Miz and Morrison beat up his car like it's in a Street Fighter 2 interlude level where they have to beat up a car. And they do that. And then they go back and hide in the van. So he comes out and he's like, "My car! I worked my whole life for this thing!" Like, didn't you just sign like a... I'm pretty sure you could have bought this a few years ago. I'm pretty sure you could have bought this a few years ago. You didn't need to say $40,000. Braun Strowman, you should be paying for that kind of shit in cash. So he talks to the security guy. "Where are they?" And that security guy points to another security guy. He says, "Where are they?" And then he points to the van. And then he can't. I was saying, "You can't get it. Come on, give us the keys. We'll go drive away." "No, I don't have the keys." "You don't have the keys? I gave them to you." "You didn't give them to me." "Well, they're in there inside," which at least is a reason why they don't drive away. But they don't drive away. And eventually, Braun Strowman, like, there's a camera on the side of the van that Braun Strowman knows is there. He can't see in the van, but he knows they're in there, I guess. It would have been kind of funny if they weren't in there, like he flipped over the wrong white van. Like it was a pedophile in there or something. Because, you know, that's the kind of van they drive. Or so I've been told. But, Braun, surprise, surprise, we all knew it was coming, flips the van over onto its side. And it's kind of funny to watch Miz and Morrison react while they're inside the van to being flipped over. It's funny. I mean, it's funny-ish. I suppose Miz and Morrison would be the guys who would think that sliming somebody was the height of prankitude. But it's funny. They're like, they definitely move up in the scale of their pranks. "Oh, we got him all wet. Oh, we were trying to get him all slimy. That's going to be hard to wash out if you try and go in the shower. Let's destroy his car." There's a big jump between this. From the first to the second one, it seems like a regular progression. From the second to the third, seems like felony vandalism, you know? Anyway. So yeah, that was the whole deal with the Miz and Morrison and the Strowman deal. I'll tell you. There is no more surefire way to get me personally to root for the heel over the babyface than to book a Sonya Deville versus Lacey Evans match during fucking Pride Month. Lacey Evans wins because Sonya Deville, although she's brutal and she does this amazing like neck breaker from the apron to the floor, but the floor is interrupted by her knee. Like the knee, the back of the head comes to the knee as the rest of the body falls all the way to the floor. It just looked brutal. She was doing really good stuff against Lacey. Lacey was kicking out and being resilient, but Lacey didn't win this match because Sonya, as she was beating up Lacey some more, Mandy comes up on the ring. You know how we talked about, gosh, it's really good to get Sonya away from Mandy for a while because that's we don't need that to keep on going. They can come back to it later, but it's good that Sonya basically won the match by pinning Mandy clean twice. They won the feud. No, feud's still going because Mandy says it is. So She gets up on the Titantron and says, I know. You don't want to ruin my life. I want to ruin your life by telling you that you're not a fighter. Wouldn't Sonya be like, yeah, no, I am. I'm totally kicking this bitch's ass. I kicked your ass a couple of times. I don't know what you're talking about. But of course, they start with the SmackDown Jinder Mahal Memorial. Hey, Sonya, it's me. Sonya, up here. But you can't do a Titantron interruption without having somebody say, it's me, up here. Look up here. Like, we don't know where the fuck you are. But Sonya screams at the Titantron and is distracted long enough to turn around right into a woman's right, and Lacey Evans pins her, and then like does her little dab with her handkerchief taunt that she does, like she actually fucking accomplished something. But she totally got her ass kicked through most of that match. Credit to her, she didn't get pinned. She kicked out of a lot of pinning attempts, but she got in like 25% of the offense in the match. Sonya's a fucking star in the making. Lacey Evans is like, if Charlotte Flair grew up in 1855 Alabama and had no talent. That's who Charlotte Lacey Evans is. Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus at Backlash. Nobody could see that coming. Somebody interviewed Chad Gable backstage. And Chad Gable's is interrupted by Mojo Rawley, who's still here for some reason. The only reason he was traded from Raw to SmackDown is because Gronk was going to be on SmackDown, and Gronk is no longer part of the company. So Mojo is still on SmackDown. And I guess they got to figure out something for him to do. So he comes over and basically says, Hey, Shorty G, you're short. That's basically what he does. So Mojo Rawley gets help from Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro, who are now henching for Mojo fucking Rawley. They were henching for Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn said, fuck you, it's a plague, I'm staying home. So then they started henching for Baron Corbin. I guess Baron Corbin doesn't need a henching anymore. So now they're henching for Mojo fucking Rawley. I don't know that there's a step below Mojo Rawley on the SmackDown roster for them to hench for. Maybe if they henched for each other, that would be a step below Mojo fucking Rawley. So there, all three of them were beating up Chad Gable, and the New Day ran them off. So we're gonna get a 6-man tag later, a 6-man tag made up of 5 good professional wrestlers and 1 Mojo Rawley. So Renee Young hosted a face-to-face between Dan O'Brien and AJ Styles ahead of their match next week. They're having a match for the Intercontinental title next week on SmackDown. Not at Backlash. Not at Payback. Not at Paylash. Not at Backback. Not at Backlash either. Except for they totally are, because next week on SmackDown, it's totally primed for them to start the match, and then the match gets interrupted or thrown out for whatever reason, double count out, one guy's beating the other guy up too much or whatever, and then they postpone it and do round 2 at Backlash. This time for real, they're totally doing that. You know it, and I fucking know it. So anyway, Daniel Bryan talks about how he wants the Intercontinental title to be awesome. He wants to win it so that he can defend it all the time. And AJ Styles is like, nah, what the hell are you talking about? I want to win it because I want to win it, the title. And I'll defend it whenever the hell I fucking feel like it. And so you, it's obvious who you want to root for here. Daniel Bryan is the guy that it's well done, you know, and AJ Styles like, you were an idiot to not just take a bye. I took a bye because I'm smarter than you. Great. And so Bryan convinces AJ Styles to give Drew Gulak a shot at the title because a shot at an opportunity at beating AJ Styles. And because Bryan's whole thing is I'm going to face everybody, give everybody an opportunity. That's his deal. So AJ Styles versus Drew Gulak happens, and Drew Gulak defeats AJ Styles. Clean. Like, AJ was, like, paying attention to Daniel Bryan as he was setting up to give Drew Gulak the Styles Clash. So I guess it was kind of a distraction finish, but it wasn't like Daniel Bryan's music started playing, and AJ's like, what? What's music? Where? Huh? And then he lost. He was about to give the Styles Clash to Drew Gulak and looked at Daniel Bryan like, ha-ha, watch me give the Styles Clash to your buddy. And then Gulak reversed it into a pinfall. So he won. Clean. Good for Drew Gulak. I think this probably just winds up being AJ Styles versus Drew Gulak more after Daniel Bryan wins the title, hopefully, at a Backlash, not a Payback, not a Paylash, not a Backback, but at Backlash. They're totally going to do Drew Gulak versus AJ Styles in the tournament finals to crown a new Intercontinental Champion. On the same night that they're doing Edge versus Randy Orton, and they're going to try and tell us that Randy Orton versus Edge is the greatest match of all time. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that six-man tag thing I was telling you about, New Day and Chad Gable won. I mean, it's a stupid, like, this is the best they have for New Day. Maybe it's because they were like, we were going to do a New Day versus Forgotten Sons thing, but we forgot. No, seriously, Jackson Ryker, you probably shouldn't post shit like that at this time, in this current climate, when everybody else in the locker room basically says, no, I'm not working with that guy. I mean, not really, but they're thinking it. So maybe they were going to do it, but they're not anymore. I don't know. So, yeah, there was the saddest thing is they still have Mojo in his, like, singlet that has, like, broken spiderweb glass everywhere. Remember that? Where he was, like, doing promos into the mirror, and eventually, like, he broke the mirror, and then he, like, traced the broken mirror on his face, and that was going to be his gimmick, and they forgot all about it, and they never mentioned it again. But apparently he got a bunch of broken glass themed singlets made, and he's still wearing them, even though they dropped that part of his character entirely. That's sad. I mean, that's shitty of the company, but that's sad. Yeah, he actually got pinned in this. It's crazy because usually the henchmen take the pinfall. It was weird that Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura are teaming with Mojo Rawley. Mojo Rawley is the most important man on their team. What has happened to Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro? Jesus Christ. Women's tag match. Championship match. The Boss and Hug Connection are back until their inevitable and looming breakup. But they won. They won the match. Decent match. Good match. It was one really obvious, like, oh my God, how can they coexist? Bayley is just so mean to Sasha Banks moment where Bayley had tagged herself in, I guess, right before Sasha was doing the bank statement. Or did she tag her in during? Did she tag herself in during the bank statement? I'm not really sure. But she gets in the ring. Is like, hey, I'm the legal man, woman. So she puts Nikki Cross in the bank statement now and kind of like kicks Sasha, get out of the ring so they can call a submission. But Nikki gets out of it, and then Sasha gets back in the ring and tags herself back in as well. And then she does the bank statement again, which is reversed into a counter pinfall by Nikki, which in that pinfall was reversed into another pinfall by Sasha Banks. So Sasha did all the work. And of course, Bayley celebrates mostly, but they're celebrating equally. I personally love how much Bayley hates Michael Cole in kayfabe. I also hope she hates him in real life. But I think it's great. She's like just screaming in his face like, ah, I won. Look at me. Look at all the gold I have. It's so heavy. It's so heavy, all this gold. How will I ever be able to carry it? I think it's great. This looks like the Iconics were all set to get a match versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. I still think it's possible that Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss and the Iconics all get shots at Bayley and Sasha at Backlash, and that Bayley F's up and screws Sasha out of the tag titles, and the Iconics become the tag champions. By the way, speaking of the Iconics, they didn't use any of the what's it called? Brand-to-brand invitational this week. None of it. Charlotte was somehow off TV. It's amazing. But what I liked, what I would have loved, they could have used some brand-to-brand invitational for the Iconics just so when Kayla Braxton got slimed, you could have Billie Kay like stick her head out way down the corridor from way away and just hear, "Hey, Kayla!" That would be great. That would have been so good. New women's tag champs. Bayley and Sasha, they had those tag titles taken from them too early. Like you could tell they were all about making those tag titles into something really, really, really special. They're being on TV more often now, these tag titles, and that's good. But for the longest time, they did not want anything to do with them. Bayley and Sasha, it seemed to me, were absolutely planning on defining those things all the time on all three brands over and over again. And I think that would have been great, and it would have helped them. So it's cool that they're tag champs again. And it's cool that Bayley, who wears her women's title as a bandolier, which I think is fantastic. I'm glad. These women deserve to be champs. Sasha in particular. It's crazy to me that Sasha, to me, is by far the most talented of the four horsewomen. Talented. Now, she's small and some would say injury prone. I think in the ring, it's Sasha. Charlotte is big and really, I mean, they're all very, very good. But to me, Sasha's a cut above. And it's crazy to me that if you look at the total number of A, title reigns, and B, like total amount of days as champion, like it's Charlotte has way more title reigns, but it's like Becky has the most days as champion, then Charlotte, then Bayley. Bayley and Charlotte are pretty much equal. And then way down here is Sasha. Because she would always her deal was back 3-4 years ago, she could win the title on Raw, but always lose the title as soon as she was defending it on pay-per-view. Sasha is due for a very long run as singles champion. I hope when she eventually beats Bayley for this title, when we realize after Sasha beats Bayley for the title that Sasha was the heel all along, even though they've been trying to tell us that it's Bayley. Sasha as heel, like the boss, that character, that making a comeback and also reigning for like 9-10 months would be really, really good for Sasha. She deserves it. She's so, so, so talented. And I listen, I love what Bayley's doing. I do. And I understand why people love Charlotte. And I can't argue with her abilities in the ring. Moonsaults aside, I can't argue with her abilities in the ring. And Becky is absolutely captivating. 100% totally captivating. You can miss me with your whole, oh, that's terrible booking. Bliss cross applesauce should have been champs forever. Like, eh. Meh. I think both Nikki and Alexa are talented. I will always stand for Nikki Cross NXT style rather than this thing they got her doing, because I don't buy any of it. And Alexa Bliss is really good at talking, and sometimes she's fun to watch in the ring, but like I think that she is slightly overrated. Speaking of the women's division on SmackDown, what were we doing with the whole Dana Brooke beats Naomi easily twice? What was that? Was that a thing? Was there a reason for that? I'm just wondering. Because it seemed like if you were going to do that, like Dana Brooke being demonstrably better than Naomi in the ring, it had to be leading to something. But we haven't touched that storyline in, ooh, I don't know, 3 weeks? Maybe longer? You can't stop and start storylines with people that far down the card because people forget about it. You're going to say, okay, Dana Brooke shocks Naomi by qualifying for the Money in the Bank ladder match by beating Naomi. Then, after the Money in the Bank ladder match, Naomi gets a rematch versus Dana Brooke, and Dana Brooke beats her again, clean as a sheet. That has to lead to something. Otherwise, you've left us hanging with the thought that somehow Dana Brooke is better than Naomi, which she's not. So it just looks weird. Can we say weird? You can't leave us hanging with storylines like that. Because people will have forgotten about it. I guarantee you there are people who are going to listen to this podcast who will have forgotten entirely about the whole Dana Brooke beats Naomi clean twice. Weird, huh? Storyline. And then the not follow up on it. It is shitty that they did not capitalize on the amazing amount of goodwill that Naomi received when she came back at the Royal Rumble. It is a shitty thing that they did to not capitalize on it. And it allows people like me to say, this company must be racist. Because it doesn't make any other sense. What other reason would there be? I mean, maybe she's injured. Nah, maybe she's injured. Maybe she is. If she is, great. But none of that, as far as I know, is out there. You know? I'm not saying this company is racist because they're not using Naomi. I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't know why they're not using Naomi. And this company has a history of being kind of racist. And Naomi's black. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're racist. I'm just saying those other things, and then everybody else can put things together. That was SmackDown, and this has been Sour Graps. I have been Alex Pawlowski. Everybody stay out there. Keep speaking truth to power, because power can only stay deaf for so long. And until power opens its ears and hears the truth being spoken to it, everything will continue to suck.